You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, it's a Memorial Day in the United States of America, quite a somber day because of what's been going on recently in the United States and also what Mr. Trump has been saying over the weekend. But those matters need not detain us. We had a really good end to last week. Is it all over, or is this just a sort of a brief respite?
It's odd. I just put out some feelers now. I put out a tweet, asked three questions. You know, is the market still bearish? Is it bottoming? Or how do you feel? Do you think this is a genuine rally? I'm just interested to see what's in the minds. Look, this goes out to thousands of people, but not everybody there is well informed. I'm just interested to pick up how people are thinking. Lindsay, it's too early. I mean, it's obviously too early. It's we need a lot more good news to actually bring back confidence. And also you need proper news. But how can I say it needs to be proper news in the sense that, okay, inflation is coming down. Alternatively, the US economy is slowing and there's no need to be aggressive by rate. So you need proof for this. You need to
I know what you mean. You need a catalyst. In other words, you need some kind of trigger to say that okay, this was the turning point. The war stops. The leaders of Ukraine and Russia got together and they decided on a deal, and that would be a huge relief for the market. And as you quite rightly say, oil has peaked or wheat has peaked, and therefore inflation's coming down. But we haven't got that. Everything's the same. It's still the same as it was a week ago.
Well, what the question might be is that sometimes the market's pretty smart and it can sense something. You know, it can sense, okay, things are changing. I need empirical proof. You know, I need, before I go and spend other people's money and take a risk with other people's money, which I can't do. You know, you've got to be very sensitive. I can't say, I've got a gut feel, I'm going to do it. I think you need to be able to substantiate it, so that you can go back to your clients and say, look, on this piece of evidence, I feel more positive. I'm going to go into the market. So I must say I'm pretty happy with the way that markets are performing. I'm looking at the JSE as well. It's strong.
Yes.
It's now another very good day. I mean, it's up 2%. Maybe we didn't respond. You know, we only got the beginning of Wall Street on Friday. So, I mean, and it's right across the board. So, Lindsay, there's confidence there. You know, this is, it's supported by orders. Admittedly, the JSE, the volumes are very low. You know, it's very, very low. So we also need volumes. We also need volumes behind this to support this kind of gain. You know, you need people to say, yes, it's time to buy. So yeah, that's where I feel. I'm happier. But I'm not going to, you know, we're not going to raise the victory flags yet.
No, not yet, because you never get this. You're not going to get a V-shaped recovery. In other words, the market plunges over an eight-week period in the United States and then suddenly rallies over another eight-week period and you're back to where you were 2 months ago. I think the point about the JSE is it's actually quite impressive. And you and I have been sometimes slightly dismissive about South Africa Incorporated. But on the other hand, I was talking to Nick on Friday, Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth. I was talking to him and he went through a couple of numbers. He said, okay, the NASDAQ has done this year, S&P has done that, and the FTSE has done this, etc. And then the JSE came up at the end. The JSE has been a huge outperformer. Okay, it's a tiny market compared to the other markets that I've just mentioned. Yeah. But it has outperformed spectacularly compared to something like the NASDAQ, which is still in bear market territory, David.
If you look, it's interesting that you say that. Do you know what the best market has been? And I'm talking about the ones that we follow.
No, go on.
Has been the FTSE.
Oh, okay.
So year to date, okay, I'm in constant currency. What's the word you were using in there? In the home currency. I'm not translating it into dollars or pounds or anything like
that. Yeah, it's constant currencies. It's what Richemont says when it brings out its results, because it's got so many things on a constant currency basis. I think constant is the right word. But anyway, the FTSE.
Well, yeah, I don't want to go into converting everything into different kinds of currencies. So if you look at the FTSE over year to date, it's up nearly 3% or 2.7. The JSE was down 4 and a bit, trying to recover. So the FTSE is, and the reason is that there's been spectacular gains in energy stocks and also in the miners. So JSE has got its strength from the diversified miners. That's where we've got the big gains. And it's been in companies like year to date. If you look at BHP, 17%. I'm trying to pick up some of the others, and the banks as well have done pretty well. Sasol, 56% up here. Glencore up 27%. Anglo's 15%. So that's where we've gained our strength. But it's also given some of the smaller businesses underneath that, the confidence as well to grow. So it has been. It's been, a very reasonable market. You've got to call the next leg. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You've got to say what happens now.
I think a bottoming formation, David. I don't want to talk too much about technicalities or anything, but a technical chart reflects fundamentals and people's mood and people's buying and selling habits. So I would say that probably, if the bad news is already in there, it's not going to go spiking back up again. It's just going to bumble along at the bottom and then gradually start to rise again between now and the end of the year, and maybe even longer. But maybe that 8-week period of losses on Wall Street, which influenced obviously the rest of the world, that maybe the 8-week period was the worst of it. Because the other thing that happened was that the Russians said they're not going to use, they said categorically they're not going to use nuclear weapons in its war against Ukraine. And I think that relieved a lot of people, actually, because I think a lot of people in Europe were thinking, well, if they do that, then they could do that to us as well.
Yeah.
So maybe.
This is costing them a lot of money. This war is costing them an absolute fortune. And I think the economy is going to start cracking a little. I'm talking Russia. Something has to give. We saw this in China. I mean, if you've been following the news, there's like a standoff between the premier and the chairman. That's between Xi Jinping and Li. I don't know how you can pronounce them. I always get confused when it comes to Chinese names.
Yes.
With respect, I don't want to disrespect them, but
no.
It sounds like Li Ka-shing or something like that, except whatever. And there's been a standoff because the premier feels that something has to be done for the economy, whereas Xi has been sticking to this COVID zero policy, which is absolutely destroying it. So, even there in China, we've started to see, concerns about the economy and about the cost of this for, because I know they've got an election coming up, China, whatever you call it. I don't know whether it is an election or whether main officials get elected.
There's no such thing as an election in China. We know that because there's only one party, obviously. So it's one that is promoted most by Xi. I don't know. I'm being disparaging
you
again.
You still got to select leadership, and they still have to get some kind of vote. Although I suppose everybody's dead scared to vote against the Xi, and just in case he comes in power, because that'll be the end of your career.
Yes.
So, but you can see stresses. There are stresses, and that's why I think that somewhere China is blinking now with its COVID policy. That's why markets are firm today, and I think Russia is also going to have to blink, because somewhere down the line, you could get, I don't want to say revolution, but you're going to get stress. And people say, okay, we've had enough. This is costing too much. I don't really want to go back to 1917 and struggle and go through the stresses that we had then. So, yeah. So
Anyway, let's, whatever the reason is, and whether this has, whether we have seen the low, and this is just a knee-jerk reaction to coming off the low from an oversold position, and now we bumble along and form a base and then shoot up next year or something. I don't know. But anyway, it certainly looks so much more encouraging. Thursday and Friday of last week were really good. Today has been really, really good as well. And talking about today, a few companies came out with some numbers, David. Momentum Metropolitan, I can't even bring myself to talk about that because I don't understand them, and it's quite honestly, it's boring. They came out with a 9-month update. I'll just read the list before you decide which one you want to pick.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, Momentum Metropolitan came out with numbers, a 9-month update. AdCorp came out with annual results, and as soon as the market opened, it was up 6%. I don't know what it's doing now. Signia recently, well, in the last hour or so, has come out with an update as well, a trading update, share price up, you know, close to 4%. Bidvest, again, and I don't know why they come out with a 10-month operational update, but they have done. Share up around about 0.5%. Which one of those is something that would make David Shapiro sit back and say, okay, I need to read these numbers?
I think I've known Bidvest for a long time, and yes, one's got to go through the business because it's also very reflective of what's happening in the service industry in South Africa.
Right.
It's got a broad spread of businesses. There's not much there. Everything's doing well, and there are no numbers associated with a trading update. And I think this could be a before they go into a closing period, they're going into the last month. They're an end of June company. So they're going into the last month, and they might be seeing analysts and that, and just giving you an idea of how they're trading, which is good. I mean, they haven't said anything that's dramatic. We've come out of COVID, and I go back to momentum now. Remember, during that and last year, there were a lot of claims and death claims and issues. So, Lindsay, I think it's going to take a couple of years before we can decide whether South African businesses have got over the lockdown hump, over COVID, and whether we're back to 2018, 2019 and moving forward. There are a lot that, you saw Nedbank downgraded the South African economy to 1.6%, which is the same thing that the Reserve Bank did. They took it down to 1.7% from 2%. Things were looking a bit better. They brought it back, mainly because of load shedding, and also because of the floods in Natal are going to take a few points off that. So we still got some hardships ahead here. What worries me about this enthusiasm that we're seeing? Have a look at the oil price.
Do you remember, just before you go on with your probably more articulate points, do you remember I said to Nick last week when the three of us were chatting, I said, the one thing that really worries me is that the oil price spike is not an oil price spike which has been because of a tanker being blown up in the Gulf of Arabia or something like that. It's not one of those spiky things where people have to scramble in order to get oil covered on the futures markets. It's really relentless, David. It doesn't stop. And here we are above $120 a barrel. And although you can say to yourself, well, it can't keep going at this pace in percentage terms, but it's still up there. It's the price of energy is non-stop to the upside. And I, as I said last week, I worry about it, and clearly you are as well.
There's no relief. We're not hearing the OPEC coming and saying we're going to push out more. We're not hearing America saying we're going to push out more. America's dug into strategic reserves. I would imagine other countries have done that. If China is now coming out of lockdown and is going to catch up for what it's denied its citizens, and people are going to go out and spend and get business back going, there's going to be suddenly a spike in demand again. That's how I see it. The other thing is Russia. The EU is still trying to formulate sanctions against them and move away from their oil. So you put it all together, you've got $120 Brent. Now, when I translate that, you know that 2 years ago, the oil price fell below 40 in the depth of COVID, in the lockdown. I think it was around about June. If you go back 2 years, you'll see Brent was 40 or below. We're now three times that. I don't know where the Rand was. I can't remember where the Rand was there. Might have been high. But we are paying very close to the highest we've ever paid for oil in Rand terms.
Well, I can tell you something that in March, I think it was 2020, so 2.25 years ago, 2.33 years ago, Brent crude oil, it obviously had that anomaly where it was actually went negative at some stage, but it was trading between $10 and $15 a barrel in the as a precursor to that extraordinary situation that we saw. And so it's gone up 10 times, more than 10 times since then. And again, I don't know what the Rand was doing either. But this has been one of the biggest bull markets in commodities I've ever seen in my life. And it's not stopping. And it hasn't been spiky. It's been genuinely a genuine bull market that you would love if it was a stock, if it was a if it was a security on the JSE or on the Nasdaq, you'd say, what a fantastic bull market. But of course it's not a fantastic bull market because it's a tax on us. So
well, it's a big one. The point where I'm moving to is that it's we're going to get a massive hike in petrol prices now. Now for most we've spoken about this for people in South Africa or for people in poorer countries, and whatever we might say, we are a poor country, and you judge that by GDP per capita.
Right.
You know, we're not we're pay maybe a little richer than some other poorer countries, but we're still poor, and it means that most of the wallets, people who earn money here, most of their money goes on transport, you know, to get to their place of work. It also goes on food, and both of those are through the roof, which means the vast amount of their wallet, the vast amount of what they have to consume and the money they have to spend goes on those two items. So something's got to give. Now, I mean, we rely heavily. Why did Pick and Pay? Where is it going? It's not going to the top end of the market because people are getting richer. It's not competing with those juicy grapes we get at Woolworths at a huge price, or they're competing at the bottom end. You know, they're going down to Boxer. Now, that's the market that I fear is going to be hurt. And that's really the substance of the South African economy. And I think that's where I'm concerned, is that, hold on a sec, I think there's going to be a huge outcry. You can see the strikes we're getting in every I don't know whether the trade unions are there just to cause political trouble, or whether there's genuinely a demand for higher pay because people can't make it meet. Mm. I would say the latter. You know,
I would say so too. I don't think they're mixing it up politically. I think they're genuinely concerned about the about the income and well-being of their members. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of unions, but I do think in this case that the CPI that we see is not the true CPI for a worker who works on a mine or in a factory or something.
Exactly. You know, so I think that there are going to be issues ahead with the market. And that's why I'm absolutely staggered. I can't, in my mind, come to terms with why we have to keep putting up interest rates. People are naturally going to reduce their spending patterns. And it's right at the bottom end of the market. So, you know, what we're going to achieve by raising interest rates just eludes me. You know, for me, it's, rates are going up for whatever reason. It helps my savers. It means that they're getting more for the excess money that they're putting away. But I cannot see, you know, already, and this is the new word that we're using all the time, this demand destruction.
Oh, I see.
You know, that's the latest word that everyone says, which means that people are spending less, you know, because it's killing demand. Anyway, so when we talk about, we talk about the results that are coming through, whether it's from a Bidvest or wherever it is, I'm a little concerned that down the line is going to be strained.
The thing is about the South African Reserve Bank, and again, I refer to its conversations that I've had with you and Nick. We've said, the Reserve Bank's behaving very responsibly. It's a pillar of stability in South Africa when there's a little bit of chaos, both domestically and internationally, and well done to them and everything. But I look at it and I think to myself, Is the way that they behave when it comes to interest rates just based on what's happening overseas? Because it's entirely inappropriate, in my opinion. I say to myself, if you look at the population of the United Kingdom or America or Germany or France, most of the people that are economically active in those countries I've just mentioned are very, very influenced by an interest rate cut or an interest rate rise, because they've got mortgages, they've got car finance, etc. Most people in South Africa, the majority of the population, isn't affected by it. If you've got an account at Capitec, for example, you don't get affected by a rise in interest rates. Am I being too simplistic here? But the man and woman in the street in South Africa doesn't care whether interest rates go up or down. No. So what is it's like an impotent weapon here that they're wielding at us, don't you think?
That's my view, but I have to concede and that I haven't got the training or understanding to argue that point in a court of law. Or in front of a judge, you know what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I know, exactly. You haven't got a fundamental basis for it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're trying to intellectualize this and say, why are you doing this? You know, this is the old rule book. You know, this is Volcker in the 1980s. I could understand why he did it. It was entrenched. But I don't know whether it works. I just, as Stiglitz said the other day, you know, he said, by raising interest rates, you're not going to grow more wheat,
That was a cute saying, but I mean, I don't know what he's trying to say.
What he's trying to say is that you've got to address the supply side. You've got to address pushing out more oil or pushing out more food. That's if you want to get on top of it from a global point of view, you've got to get together and say, how are we going to get more wheat to poverty-stricken countries, or how are we going to alleviate shortages of oil, understanding that Russia is that we have this Russian issue. So I don't know whether there's any kind of cooperation. We screwed it up on the pandemic. There was no cooperation between countries. But if you are genuinely nervous of a global poverty, which the UN are, of people walking around starving and not being able to buy bread, which is the staple diet of most people, what are you going to do about it? Address, not put up interest rates. You know, that's not going to solve it.
That's a very good point, actually. Yeah, sometimes you have to do it. And I don't know, in a so-called developed world society, which is addicted to debt, then yes, it will take out a couple of $100 from your monthly income statement, and you're going to have to, you haven't got the $200 to go and spend on stuff like you would do. In South Africa, nah. I don't think it's right.
No.
I don't think it's right. I think they're doing the right thing, but I don't think it's right, which is a contradiction in terms. But on the other hand, that's my view. David, markets...
We have to, for the audience, I mean, for the people who are listening...
Oh, yes.
You know, who may have Economics 3 and who may have honours in economics or masters, I apologise for my naivety or lack of understanding.
Oh, please.
But do you know what I'm trying to say? I'm just trying to give a common sense approach to it and say, why are you doing this? Anyway,
David, the fact that you're still in doing what you're doing after decades of being in the market and as successful, you don't have to apologize to anybody. There is theory and there is practice, and there are market conditions that you've never seen before, and therefore those market conditions warrant sort of a merit adjustment, I think. I don't think people should be too rigid when it comes to a third world country, or shall we call it a second world country like South Africa, shouldn't be doing what a first world country like Britain or the United States should be doing. I think there should be some more creativity. But anyway, that's just me. David, the football season's over. I don't know what to do. Yeah. I mean, I sat down last night and I thought, I mean, I was clinging on to scraps last night, Nottingham Forest versus Huddersfield in the Championship playoff final to go up into the Premiership, when they say it's worth £170 million to the winner, and Nottingham Forest won. And it was quite honestly, it was an awful game. But I watched it because I knew I wouldn't be watching another decent game until August the 6th. So I watched it anyway, sicko that I am. But I was thinking about Nottingham Forest, and nobody really... I don't think anyone of I think there's a generation gone by that remembers Nottingham Forest, but you remember Brian Clough, the late, great Brian Clough. He was famously appointed Leeds manager, Leeds United manager, and he lasted 33 days, which I think is the shortest tenure ever in a Premiership or top flight management history. And they and they've gone up to the Premiership for the first time in 23 years. They won the European Cup twice, David, under Brian Clough. They were a really really good team.
No, they were. No, they were always. And it was at a different time. I mean, it was before the Premier League, and I think it was at a time before the big international money came in to you know to British soccer, and before the you had the Chelseas, before the Abramoviches and all the other Americans that have now come in, and oil producing sheiks, you know, that are now supporting these businesses, and the next one is going to be Newcastle and and so on, you know. But so, and at that time, I think it was pretty well spread. I was looking, and I've been looking at some, you know, I've been cleaning up my home here and just repacking a lot of old papers and that. What's incredible is that when you look at those teams, when I started to, they were all English. They were never foreigners, and that meant that it was much widespread. The leagues were, you know, some of these, and also the UK, the whole economy was different. So, you know, where the money was, but Nottingham Forest was a great team. We were just talking about Huddersfield as well.
Yes,
you know, Huddersfield has a magnificent history, and it's so interesting that they've even got this far. You know, that Huddersfield have come to where they are, because I think they were one of the very first clubs in British football.
Yeah, they were one of the founding members of the Football League. Yes, they really were, along with teams like Accrington,
1908,
Accrington, Stanley, and everything. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's steeped
I thought it was earlier than that. Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been. But anyway. The point is that there's no football for me now till August the 6th. I don't know. I might have to get myself a pair of spectacles and actually start reading a couple of books. I don't know.
I must tell you, I wanted Real Madrid to win, but I did
so
feel
did
for Liverpool. I felt for them.
Yeah.
They were, after the game, they were absolutely destroyed.
They were abject in their misery. But the thing is, you have a look at Liverpool. They've played three finals: the League Cup final in England, the FA Cup final in England, and both are like tin cups compared to the Championship in England, and also the UEFA Champions League, the old European Cup. They didn't score one goal in one final. It was all penalties.
You're right. They didn't score.
And they didn't score in three finals. I mean, that tells you something about their you know, their mentality, or that people have worked them out. But I do like Jurgen Klopp. His teeth, I think he's overdone his teeth. And I do.
You mean too white?
Yeah, they're too white and just too big. I don't know. It looks like a.
funny.
But also, he looked better in glasses than he does with contact lenses. But he's a really, really good chap and highly intelligent. I saw a long interview with him over the weekend, and he really does care about issues beyond football. He's a great chap, but as for the teeth, I think he could use some advice there. David, thank you very much for your time, as always, on a Monday. David Shapiro is from Sassman Securities. David, should I be putting out some sort of contact details of how people can get hold of you, or are you full of clients at the moment?
No, I'm okay.
Okay. In that case,
if anybody, I'm at Sassman. If anybody wants advice, I always... Yeah. You know that.
Yeah, your door is always open. Fast. No, exactly.
Our door's always open. Exactly. We help anybody.
Very good.
Whether you've got a rand or a million or 10 million or 20, we never turn away people.
Very good indeed. Yeah. Nice attitude. Mm. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities, and that was Shapiro World. David will be back with me tomorrow night for the 5 o'clock shadow with Nick Kunze. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organisation, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.